This is now continued from tape one. We were in the middle of the land reading of 1891, and we continue now. Both the government and the estate were unmoored by the Bactier raid, and even the raiders were acquitted. Even although the raiders were acquitted. In the High Court in Edinburgh. 4 years later, in 1891, the land-hungry families of Lochs, including the 18 men who sailed from Crossbus in March 1891, were reported in various national newspapers as becoming increasingly impatient with the living conditions they were forced to endure. There was, therefore, fresh outbreaks of discontent among the people because they felt that there was never any hope of a change in their living conditions so long as they continued to endure the deprivation, their deprivation patiently. They were sure that the laws governing the land in the Highlands were unjust laws, which should be changed to enable the indigenous population who lived and worked in the area access to the land. There is good reason to believe that the new movement was influenced by the hero of the Bactier raid, Donald MacRae, who had by then resigned from his post of head teacher at Ballallan and was active as an organiser for the Land League. At the time of the 1891 land raiding, Sheriff Jameson's telegrams to the Scottish office refers disdainfully to the presence of Donald MacRae as follows. I quote, Donald MacRae, the dismissed schoolteacher, is here. A reporter of the mischievous and voracious newspaper, the North British Daily Mail, and of course doing no good. End of telegram. The early settlers at Crossbus were never happy there, and they always yearned for a return home to Lochshell, which they considered to be a much better place agriculturally and from a fishing point of view, as Donald Mackenzie, 24, Crossbus, stated in his evidence to the Napier Commission in 1883. He said, the people from the two villages at Lochshell were put into Crossbus, which was smaller than either of the two villages they were driven from, and none of it was cultivated except a small spot in the middle. In contrast, he said, Lochshell was a very good place. They had plenty of cattle and sheep there. Our own family had 4 milking cows and several young beasts, several young followers, and about 50 sheep. There was a good outrun or back, but here in Crossbus I cannot keep one cow unless I pay for her foot out of my own pocket. Donald concluded by saying that he and others would like to go back to Paris. The 18 men who sailed from Crossbus in 1891 were therefore fulfilling a long-standing ambition. On arrival at Doransay, the raiders roofed 3 of the least ruinous of the former crofter houses with spars, divots and sails. Among the men there was at least one of those evicted from Oransey in 1843, John Mackenzie, 20, Crossbus, the Inverochy, who was about 14 years old when his family were evicted from Oransey. The fact that he was married to Janet Martin, a sister of Roderick Martin, the tenant of Crubic and Oransey, did not deter him from taking part in the expedition. 2 of the raiders involved in the Park Deer raid were there as well. Donald Macmillan, 6, Crossbus, and Malcolm Mackenzie, 26, Crossbus. they were among those of the Park Deer raiders that were acquitted in the High Court in Edinburgh. The Oronsay land raiders were unfortunate from the start because the weather conditions deteriorated steadily to blizzard conditions the day after their landing, making their makeshift dwellings more or less untenable. The floor of the two bothies were quite a puddle. And the only seats were cold stones. The following are the names of the 18 men who sailed from Crossbus. Donald McKinney's Alec, aged 48 years from 5 Crossbus. Donald Macmillan Angus, aged 40 years from 6 Crossbus. Donald Macaulay Norman, aged 40 years from 7 Crossbus. Neil MacLean Loughlin, aged 46 from 10 Crossbus. Malcolm MacLeod, 42, 13 Crossbus. Donald MacLeod, son of Malcolm, aged 50, 13 Crossbus. John Mackenzie, son of Neil, age 45, 18 Crossbus. John Mackenzie, son of Modo, age 62, 20 Crossbus. Murdo MacDonald, aged 42, of 22 Crossbus. Donald MacDonald, James, that's son of James, age 31, 23 Crossbus. Roderick Kennedy, son of Modo, age 48, 23 Crossbus. John Mackenzie Donald, age 37, 24 Crossbus. Malcolm Mackenzie Alec, 26 Crossbus. Malcolm MacDonald Alec, 49. Roderick MacLeod, John, age 51, 13, Ranish. Alexander MacLeod, John, 45, Ranish as well. John Mackenzie, 42, 27, Ranish. Murdo Morrison, John, 28, 22, Newport. Now, I understand that John Mackenzie, 27, Ranish, was a brother of Malcolm Mackenzie, 26, Crossbus. I would like to check up on the relationship of Roderick MacLeod, 13, Ranish, Alec MacLeod, whatever number he had in Ranish, and Mudder Morrison, 22, so I'd like to check up on the relationship between them and the people of Crossbus. On 1st April, the Glasgow Herald correspondent at Stornoway reported that 10 men from Gravelland raided Steamroy, which is a mile or two from Oronsay, along the shores of Lucia. That was followed by 10 men from Calvos to prepare bothies and tilled portions of the land of Steamroy. One of the Graver men who came to Stornoway to purchase supplies for the nest for the new colony was interviewed, and he stated that everything was proceeding satisfactorily both at Steamroy and Oronsay, and that they were preparing to put seed in the ground. Men from Cormore were interviewed in Stornoway on 31st March 1891, and it was stated that an expedition were to leave from their township by boat the following morning for the Deer Forest. The expedition would consist of 11 men who had decided to settle upon the part of the Deer Forest near Eishkin Shooting Lodge. We know the following names from South Loch's land raiders at Steamroy in 1891. Robert Macmillan, 3 Graver. Malcolm MacDonald, 9 Graver. Colin Benchie, Andra Matheson, 15 gráður, Andra Brúchi, Kenneth McCaskill, 17-18 gráður, Guðjón Fálein, John Campbell, 18 gráður, Ian Alastair, Angus MacPhail, 19 gráður, Ernest Moore, Kenneth MacPhail, 19-18, Guðjón Húkadík, John Matheson, 30 gráður, Johnny Moore, Alan McCaskill, Lakeview, Alan Moy, Alan Yellen, John McLeod, 3 Kalbas, Daniel Hooney, Kenneth Mackay, 7 Kalbas, Konyo Hallam, Angus Morrison, 9 Kalbas, and Zambrohi, Donald McKenzie, 12 Kalbas, Vic, Mwanyaramuch, Donald McLennan, 18 Marvick, Donald Alistair. There's only some of them we know that there were more involved. A few days later, a report from the sheriff stated that 11 men from Cromore entered the Park Deer Forest at a point called Stromas, but they did not encamp, but went ashore and dug the land for cultivation and returned to their boat. Because they did not encamp, they could not be proceeded against under the Trespass Act of 1865. In another report by the police superintendent of Stornoway to the chief constable at Dingle on 4th April 1891, it is stated that 8 men from Cromore entered a Park Deer Forest at a place called Scaladale, and they began to turn the ground. It is not quite clear if there were 2 expeditions from Cromore consisting of 18 men in all, but it seems there was. Subsequently, it is stated that the Cromore land raiders built a bothy, and therefore they became liable for trespassing, and Lady Matheson, the proprietress of Lewis, served an interim interdict on 6 Cromore raiders, and in due course they came to trial at Stornoway. Attempts were made at tillage in both Oranjee and Steamerway. Potatoes were planted, but the weather was so inhospitable, and the law moved so quickly that they were not able to accomplish much. Meantime, feverish activities were going on behind the scenes, with telegrams going back and forth between Stornoway on the one hand, the Secretary of State for Scotland, the Admiralty, and the Chief Constable in Dingwall, etc. Sheriff Jameson reported to the Scottish office on 11th April 1891, felt that this opportunity should be taken to ask the government to settle the question of whether the Admiralty should not be compelled, if future outbreaks are to take place, to undertake special service in the Isles when called upon. Another telegram showed that the Admiralty was consulted as to the possibility of a gunboat and 50 marines being available to the sheriff if resistance was offered by the Oranjee and Steamboat land raiders. Yet another telegram from the sheriff to the Secretary of State for Scotland states, "Going to try ordinary methods first." That's a quotation, "going to try ordinary methods first. Do not send gunboat, but arrange to have one at disposal end of next week." End of quotation. In another telegram, the sheriff states that an investigation has confirmed him in his opinion that military and police are practically useless in such emergencies. On 9th April 1891, 12 of the Loch's land raiders implicated in the raids upon the grazing farm of Steamer Guernsey were brought to trial at the Sheriff Court at Stornoway before Sheriff Principal Jameson on a criminal charge under the Trespass Scotland Act 1865. Six of the men indicted were concerned in the raid upon Oranjee and six upon the raid at Stingray. But the libel in each individual case was given out separately, although the terms of the whole were identical, except that the offence was held to have been committed by the Stingray men on a different date to that of those at Oranjee. Great interest was manifested in the trial, and the courthouse was crowded throughout the day. Mr. Kenneth MacDonald, solicitor in Inverness, who was retained for the defence, failed to put in an appearance, and Mr. Donald McCrae, former head teacher at Ballallan, was prevailed upon by friends to represent the accused. Mr. John Ross, joint procurator fiscal, appeared on behalf of the Crown. The names of the 12 men were as follows: John Mackenzie Donaldson, Crosspost; Donald Macmillan Angusson, Crosspost; Malcolm Mackenzie Alistairson, Crosspost; Donald MacDonald Jameson, Crosspost; John Mackenzie Alexanderson, Farnish; John Morrison Johnson, Lurbos; Donald MacLennan Alexanderson, Marvey; Kenneth Mackay, Malcolmson, Culbos; Donald Mackenzie Donaldson, Culbos; Kenneth MacPhail, Grower; Alan McCaskill Donaldson, Grower; Robert MacMillan Motorson, Grower. At the outset, Mr. McCrae intimated preliminary objections to the whole case. In the first place, he said that the case should be prosecuted by the Procurator Fiscal, Mr. William Ross, in person, and not by John Ross, who was also Lady Matheson's law agent, and also private agent Roderick Martin, the tenant of the disputed land. The second objection was that, taking into account the whole circumstances which have accrued within the past few weeks at Lockes, it was apparent that collusion existed between the Crown officials and the estate in the matter. As was well known, interim interdicts at the instance of Lady Matheson had been granted against the men, and along with that, and simultaneously, there had been sprung upon them these actions for trespass on behalf of the fiscal. The sheriff repelled both pleas as being really groundless. The case against Malcolm Mackenzie, Alexander Crosspost, which was similar to that of the other men, set forth that he did on 24th March 1891 and on subsequent days occupy land in the parish of Lochs, known as Oranjee, without the permission of Dame Mary Jane Matheson or Roderick Martin, farmer Grubbig, the legal occupier of the land, contrary to the Trespass Scotland Act 1865, whereby accused rendered himself liable to a penalty not exceeding £1 or imprisonment for any period not exceeding 14 days. Mr. Mackenzie pleaded not guilty, and the first witness was Roderick Martin Grubbig, who said that he was tenant of Grubbig for the past 8 years on lease. Suspecting that something was amiss, he went to Crosspost and found, on inquiry, that the men had gone away with the intention of cultivating Oranjee and eventually settling there. Returning to Crosspost, he dispatched a message to the superintendent of police at Stornoway asking for protection. Proceeding afterwards to Oranse across the hills, he found 18 men in the West Bay busy roofing some old former Crofter houses. Next morning, Wednesday, he again visited the place and found that 3 bothies had been roofed and the men were busy digging the ground. On Friday, they left but returned on the following Monday. 11 of them left again on Friday, 3rd April, leaving 7 men behind. But when the police officer appeared with writs of interdict, these also withdrew, and none of them returned since. Mr. Martin said one of his cows ran mad when she saw the huts. Laughter. The sheriff remarked that she is not accustomed to see houses, I suppose, and no doubt she is a very sensitive animal. Laughter again. You don't say that any of these men did any harm to a single animal belonging to you. No, my lord. So far as I know, they never disturbed any of my stock, nor did they do violence to anything belonging to me. Cross-examined, Mr. Martin said that before he got Oranse, he did not know that the crofters of the Chisholm Township were desirous of having the place, nor was he aware they had made applications for it. Witness agreed that all the accused were quite mannerly towards him, and it was quite true that he had invited some of them to his house. Are you on the best of terms with them? He was asked by Mr. McCrae. I am on good terms with everyone except yourself, great laughter. Did you not offer me a dram, said Mr. McCrae, the last time we met? Renewed laughter. For the defence, Donald Macmillan, who was himself one of the parties to the indictment, was put forward first, and his evidence went to show that the people of Crossbust and neighbouring townships were in a very destitute condition, owing in a great measure to congestion and overcrowding. Knowing the special facilities afforded for fishing in the Loch Shell area, and the nature of the soil in Oranse, where their father had been living, they had made up their minds to go forward and occupy it. Their purpose was not to prosecute the fishing only, but also to cultivate the land for the support of themselves and their families. He was a married man with 7 children, and he squatted on his father's croft. His parents were born at Eishkin, within sight of Oranse, where they lived later before being evicted. Some of the men who went to Oranse were very poor, said Mr. McMillan. So poor that they had neither food nor blankets to take along with them when they left. John Mackenzie Crossbust, an old man of 76 years, said that he was born in Oranse and was in his 20s when his father's family had been removed. The crofters were not so numerous then, and consequently they were much more comfortable. The multiplying of squatters on the crofts was the bane of crofting life. It was what brought them to their present pass. 2 of his own families are squatting, and one of them is involved in the present land raiding. That closed the evidence. The other men were brought forward singly and charged, and the charge read over to them, to each of them, and they all pled not guilty. Proof was led formally, after which the agents addressed the court. The sheriff, addressing the accused at length, concluded by saying he found them all guilty. And the next point to be considered was as to the sentence. And in connection with it, he was obliged to conclude that theirs was an aggravated case. He had endeavoured to discover some circumstances in their favour, but could find none. It had been alleged that they had a perfect right to these lands because their ancestors lived there 50 years ago. But even in common law, that was absurd. Even if it might be true that some of their ancestors were settled there and had been removed, they were squatters without being able to plead that they were heirs of the Orangedale Steamboatmen at all. Last of all, they were said to be very poor. There was no work for them on the land. His lordship thought that this was a very foolish and mischievous way of speaking. It was a very serious offence, for it was nothing better than robbery, because Mr. Martin paid rent for the land, and they tried to take it by force. They could not plead ignorance. The superintendent asked them to leave, but they refused. His lordship felt it was his duty to impose the full penalty allowed by the Act, namely 14 days imprisonment without the option of a fine. There was not enough room for them in Stornoway Prison, so they served their sentences at Inverness. The trial of the second batch of 15 land raiders took place at Stornoway Sheriff Court before Sheriff Jameson on 15th June 1891 on the charge of encamping on the lands of Stainbury and Ornancy in the parish of Loch. Mr. John Ross, Procurator, Fiscal Deputy, prosecuted, and Mr. Donald McRae, former head teacher at Willalan, appeared for the accused. John MacLeod, 13 Carlos Johnson, was charged with having on 31st March and following days occupied or encamped on lands at Steamray without permission, contrary to the Trespass Scotland Act 1865. The sheriff asked the accused to plead, and the court interpreter, having translated the charge and the sheriff's question into Gaelic, and the accused replied in Gaelic that he wished Mr. MacRae to speak for him. Mr. MacRae said that after the painful and tedious trial of last Thursday, and his lordship's interpretation of the Act of Parliament under which the accused on that occasion were indicted, the whole of the men who were to appear before his lordship had resolved to plead guilty, and therefore at this stage he thought it would facilitate the public business of the whole case if the whole of the cases were taken together. The sheriff agreed, and Mr. MacRae's intention was to lay before the sheriff and the public a statement of the men's grievances and a plea for mitigation. he rose and said he would crave his lordship's permission to make a short statement in mitigation of sentence, as shortly and tersely as he could. The sheriff interrupted, saying that he wished in the first place to ask a question or two before that. The accused were again interrogated when he pleaded guilty, and the following others were afterwards brought forward in the following order, and each pleaded guilty to a similar charge, some of them encamping upon Oranse and others upon Steamerway. Angus Morrison, Calvost, Mortimer Tonal-Graver, John Matheson-Graver, John Mackenzie Crosspost, Neil MacLean Crosspost, Angus MacPhail-Graver, Kenneth MacCaskill-Graver, Sean Campbell-Graver, Donald McInnes Crosspost, Malcolm MacLeod Crosspost, Donald Macaulay Crosspost, Roderick Kennedy Crosspost, Alexander MacLeod Ronish, Andrew Matheson Graver. Then the deputy fiscal formally moved for sentence on each of the men, and the sheriff, addressing the men, said that as they pled guilty of the offence, he was prepared to let them off altogether for this time, but on condition that they would give him their word of honour that they would not commit this offence again, and would not go back to the lands of Oranse and Steamerway, except to take away their spades and other belongings. Each man was then questioned, and six of them declined to make the stipulated promises. The sheriff then dismissed the other nine men with an admonition. The sheriff's tactics were clear and fairly successful, but there were still six steadfast, strong-hearted men who remained true to the principles that motivated the raider from the outset, as well as maintaining their support for Mr. McRae, whom they briefed to appear on their behalf. Accordingly, Mr. McRae addressed the court on behalf of the men. He said it was a very sad and affecting sight to see large numbers of men brought to the court on a charge of this kind. He thought it carried very serious lessons with it and raised questions of the utmost importance. He would like to correct statements which appeared in the press and which was calculated to prejudice the best interests of the accused and all others similarly situated. It was said that these people were egged on to commit acts of lawlessness by unscrupulous agitators, and that this movement on the island was brought about by political intriguing and wire pulling. He wished to absolutely deny these charges and to point out that the harmless so-called breaches of the law were caused by the desperate conditions of poverty in which these people were steeped, and he blamed the estate management for the congestion of the population. They connived at it and encouraged it as a fruitful source of revenue to the estate coffers. Mr. McLean called in question the statement made in the witness box last Thursday by Mr. McLennan, the chamberlain, that the alleged destitution revealed 3 years ago by the inquiry carried out by Sheriff Fraser and Mr. Malcolm McNeill of the government did not really exist. And furthermore, that there was not an inch of cultivatable land in the Park Deer Forest. On the contrary, it was a well-known fact that 23 crofting townships were cleared out of the forest. Mr. McRae maintained that it was a mistake to have instituted criminal proceedings against these men. Mr. McRae maintained that it was a mistake to have instituted criminal proceedings against these men. It was quite clear that the civil actions adopted at the first stage were quite sufficient. He firmly maintained that it was not by taking a starving people by dozens before a criminal court and sending them to prison, shackled and manacled like criminals of the blackest dye, without paying the slightest attention to their home circumstances, and that the evil was to be cured. He maintained that the Lewis estate was infinitely more responsible than the men who appeared before his lordship in the door. Mr. McRae went on to say that the interests of justice might be served much better by a lighter sentence than the extreme limit which the law allowed. He felt his lordship would be fully justified in giving the men a complete acquittal. In addressing the men, the sheriff said he was sorry they did not follow the course adopted by the other men, their companions, who had left the bar. However, as they refused to abstain from such offences in future, he must therefore treat them in the same way as the 12 men on Thursday last. He had to consider what had been said by Mr. McRae on their behalf, and he was very sorry to think there was such great poverty as Mr. McRae said there was in Lewis. But he must also remark that it seemed to him that poverty had arisen from men like the accused squatting on the crofts belonging to their relatives, instead of going and seeking work for themselves elsewhere. On the whole matter, he saw no reason for making any difference between the accused and the men who were sentenced last Thursday. It was quite true, as Mr. McRae had said, that 14 days was the longest period allowed by the Act, but his lordship considered it a very short sentence for the offence they had all been guilty of. The sentence of the court was that the men be imprisoned for 14 days. The following six squatters from Cromore were tried before Sheriff Davidson at Stornoway on 13th May 1891. Alexander MacLeod Ulstanog, 24, Cromore. Donald MacLeod Dolanog, 24, Cromore. John MacLeod Shawneanog, 24, Cromore. Angus MacLeod Dunnersanog, 24, Cromore. Kenneth Mackenzie Cunyahone, 5, Cromore. John Montgomery Yanvarochi, 8, Cromore. They were charged with the contravention of the Trespass Scotland Act 1865, by encamping in the Park Deer Forest. One of the men sighted had gone away to the fishing at Barra, and a warrant was issued for his apprehension. They were sentenced to 7 days imprisonment rather than the maximum of 14 days because of the great poverty of their families. Obviously, not all the land raiders were brought to trial. There were at least 38 men involved, and possibly 50 men in all. On 23rd of April 1891, the first batch of incarcerated land raiders were released from prison, from Inverness Prison. And the men were met at the prison gate by a large crowd and congratulated on their release. Each of the men was, in the first instance, supplied with a pipe and a quantity of tobacco. And thereafter they took their seats in a waiting carriage, which was drawn by a spanking pair of horses, and was led by a piper and a banner unfurled, bearing the legend, "The Land for the People." As the carriage drove off, the waiting crowd raised a loud and hearty cheer. The raiders were then driven round the town as far as Clochnahary and returned by Bridge Street and Academy Street to the Royal Hotel. At different points, the raiders were lustily cheered, the females predominating in their enthusiasm. They were entertained to a substantial public breakfast by the Highland News at the Royal Hotel at 9:15 a.m. But before commencing, three verses of Psalm 122 from verse 6 were sung in Gaelic to the tunes of St. Paul, led by Councillor James McBain in the orthodox style of presenting each line. She gooit Jerusalem, she hang the son is more. Pray that Jerusalem may have peace and felicity, etc. Then the chairman, Reverend Mr. McGahin, who was one of the original promoters of the Land Law Reform Association and who claimed to be the first clergyman in Scotland to give public voice to the grievances under which Highland crofters suffered, said grace, or more properly speaking, engaged in prayer, which embraced a variety of petitions, including the restoration of the land to the descendants of this ancient people. Breakfast over, which was said to have been served in the very best style, the chairman made what was referred to as a bottom principle speech. Parliament, he said, had sent a commission to the Highlands, and you and other crofters have to be thanked for what would never have been granted but for your efforts in the cause of truth and justice. Every concession made has been a silent testimony to the righteousness of your cause, but much, very much more remains to be done. Then followed a series of speeches. Councillor James McBain, Councillor Gunn, and Mr. Mackenzie Greekstreet, a native of Lewes, who occupied the vice chair. He thanked those present and those who organised the breakfast for their kindness to his countrymen. Then Malcolm Mackenzie, one of the liberated men, spoke, saying that they could not thank the gentlemen enough for the honour they had done that to them that day. A coach drive and a most excellent repast in that big house. They felt as if they had not been to prison. They were simply at college. They were endeavouring to improve and not break the law. They wanted the laws their fathers lived under. Reverend Mr. McCachin, having pronounced the benediction, the company adjourned to the railway station, where, amidst loud cheers from a big crowd, the Loch's men steamed out for Stornoway. Arrangements were in hand to entertain the Lewis land raiders to be released the following week with a similar breakfast. Long before the hour of arrival of the steamer Clydesdale at Stornoway, with the land raiders from Strome Ferry, a large procession, including contingents from the various grafting townships of the surrounding districts, headed by a piper, paraded the streets of the town, and when the steamer came alongside the pier, there was a crowd of several thousand people who raised a tremendous volley of cheers at the sight of the raiders. On their landing, the vast crowd marched to Cromwell Square, where County Councillor Mr. J.G. MacDonald presided and congratulated the men on the action they took. Malcolm Mackenzie Crossfirst, who also figured in the High Court of Justiciary at Edinburgh for the Park Deer Raid, next addressed the meeting, followed by Donald Macmillan Crossfirst, one of the Oranje raiders, who delivered a stirring and eloquent address. An important sequel to the trials of these land raiders was that Sheriff Jameson appears to have been cured of the pretenses he showed during the trials. Perhaps the eloquent defence put up at the trials on behalf of the raiders by Donald McCrae, universally known as Valallan, after his leadership at the time of the Park Deer Raid, might have caused the sheriff to reflect and investigate for himself what was the real truth of the living conditions of the lost crofters at that time. In a report dated 28th April, Sheriff Jameson states that he visited Lurbost and he found 125 houses. April 1891, Sheriff Jameson states that he visited Lurbost and he found 125 houses, each containing a family of 60 crofts, and a similar state of affairs exists in the township of Trusbull. He deplored the squatting of in the villages, and blames the management of the Lewis estate, and he goes on to say that if the squatting is to be prevented in future, it would certainly be worthwhile to attempt to find crofts for at least a very large proportion of the present squatters, by cutting up some of the large farms which adjoin Crofter townships. It is quite remarkable to find the sheriff in full agreement with the aspirations of the landless squatter he had so recently put down for the maximum allowable prison sentence, and who were still incarcerated in Inverness prison. Unknown to the land raiders, the tide was turning in their favour, and such influential people as Sheriff Jameson was advocating their case in high places. Neither were they aware that the growing pressure of parliamentary and public opinion at that time was gradually forcing the government to give consideration to the problem of landless and homeless squatters and the subdivision of crofts in the Highlands of Scotland, while side by side with these conditions of extreme deprivation lay large areas of underused land from which the forefathers of these landless squatters, were forcibly evicted, such as the Park Deer Forest in Lewis. In the face of the pressure for action, of which the land raiders of Loss was part, the government were forced to set up yet another royal commission on 6 December 1892. That commission is usually referred to as the Deer Forest Commission or the Brand Commission, so called after its chairman, the powerful the so-called after its union. The powerful landed interests were at work, however, and despite the good evidence given by the deprived Crofters of Loughs to the Brown Commission, who reported in 1894, not a single extra croft or even a single acre of land was made available to the suffering Crofter population of Loughs. In 1993, 100 years later, the 102 years later, the Park Deer Forest is still intact. That therefore is as far as I got just now, and I send you this tape to listen to, and I shall look forward to hearing your comments when I go over to Crosspost the next time. Thank you very much.